So my name is Beth Racine, and I run programs at Willow Creek Community Church for families who are going through transition, marital difficulties, divorce, loss of a loved one. And I also do family consulting. So I work with individual families or one parent or a child, and I help them to find out some structures to help them to move towards some of the goals that they want to attain. So can I get a volunteer? Emma, you want to come over here? Thanks for volunteering. Okay, if you imagine a typical situation where a child is dealing with regular everyday issues, what would some of those issues be? Just everyday child things. School. What's another one? Sports. Siblings. Keep going. Friends. Bossy parents. Wants, definitely. And so there's the regular everyday thing that a child has to carry, right? And then we're going through a transition. So they're going through a divorce or they're going through a death. What are some of the new things that they get to carry? Loss, anxiety, loneliness. What else? Grief, changing all the structures in their lives and dealing with all that. Anything else? Schedule, home. And sooner or later, what begins to happen? So she doesn't get any help, they start to just all fall away. And so we know that to be true. And sometimes, thanks Emma, sometimes what happens is we start to see ourselves, because this is the same for us too, if we're going through a transition or we're going through a change, that same picture starts to happen with us, right, as adults. We start to try to hold on, and it starts to fall, and then another big one is we're trying to hold on and help our child carry those as well. True? So, what begins to happen in the way that we treat our child? A lot of times, the first thing that starts to happen is we see them as victims. Does that make sense? So if they're going through something hard, we're like, oh, we feel so bad that they're going through this. We know that sometimes our actions have contributed to things like that, and so we want to make it easier for them, and in doing that, sometimes we have a disservice for our kids. And so what I'm going to challenge you to do today, and as you leave from here today, is to see them as this quote says. It's Elizabeth Kubler-Ross who did The Stages of Grief. The most beautiful people are those who have known defeat, known suffering, known struggle, known loss, and have found their way out of the depths. These persons have an appreciation, a sensitivity, and an understanding of life that fills them with compassion, gentleness, and a deep loving concern. Beautiful people do not just happen. And so whether you come today in a place where you're feeling like, I don't know what good is going to come from my own experience, what I'm dealing with right now that I never thought I'd have to deal with, or whether you see your children and you go, I can't believe they're having to deal with something that I wish they didn't have to deal with. I challenge you to see yourself and to see them as becoming the beautiful people that God's created you to be. In all of that, in the struggles, in the change, in the transition. So with that, I'm going to share with you some of the common stages of grief. Now, stages you think of as being stage one, stage two, stage three. That's not really how grief goes. As we probably have experienced in our own lives, we have different emotions and different reactions that come to grief or to change. So I'm going to go through these, but they're not in any specific order. As we know more about grief, we know that there's an ebb and flow, that it can come up 10 years later, that it can be angry one moment, and then in the next minute you can feel really sad. So I'm going to walk through it, but just know that it's not necessarily in any particular order. So here are the responses to grief. The first one is denial. And you see this, either you've experienced it or you've seen your kids be in it, where they say, this isn't happening to me. I don't want to confront it. I don't want to deal with it. It's not happening. So you say, how you doing? And that's the common answer. What is it? Fine. Doing okay. Yep, no big deal. And you just put that mask on and you deal with it. We see that same thing in our kids. You say, how you doing? And they go, fine. But after you get down there, there's more stuff going on. Come on in. The second one is anger. And it's, why is this happening to me? You all probably recognize anger. It's in aggressive behavior. It's in yelling. It's in screaming. It's in that tense body language. That's how anger presents itself. There's bargaining. I promise that I'll be a better person if. And so many times, who do we end up bargaining with? God. Especially in a change like this, when we are Christ followers, to be able to say, oh, I just accept it. That's a really hard thing. So oftentimes, either as adults or as children, we start to say, if I do this, then will you do this? And that's just not how it works, but it's a stage that we go through. And then the next one is depression. And you see some of that numbness or that disregard. It doesn't really matter. You know, nothing really affects me. And there's a lack of an emotional response to anything. And then the final one is acceptance. Now, again, it can go interchangeably. You can be bargaining one moment and then be like, okay, I'm starting to accept that this is part of the process. And acceptance is really starting to understand that this does not define you, but it's a part of your story and who God's creating you to be. So we're going to go through each one of those. But before we do, the most important thing possible when children or adults are going through grief is connection. Oftentimes, when we're in grief, we tend to isolate. Do you know what I mean? It's easier to pull away. It's easy to make the excuse that nobody will really understand or you don't want to be a burden. Kids do the same thing. They're going through all of those same kinds of responses in their heads that we do as adults. So as parents, the most helpful thing that you can do is be very intentional about creating connections with your children. And that might sound really, really like a very small thing, but when I talk about connection, there are four pieces of connection, and you might want to write these down. Touch is one of them. Eye contact is another. Play and presence. So if I come over here and I say to you, hi, my name is Beth. Do you feel really connected to me? We had eye contact, so it felt like I paid a little bit of attention to you. What else did I have? I did eye contact. Did I have any playfulness? No. Was I very present with her? Did my body say I'm very present with her? Hi, I'm Beth. Even my body's saying, I don't really care about you, but I think I'm supposed to come over and say something. How many times are we just busy with life, and we're just going through the motions, and our child's coming up, and they're saying, hey, Mom, hey, Dad, can we talk to you? And or they don't even say, can we talk to you? They just throw something out there, and we go, oh, yeah, we'll talk about that later, or we'll deal with that later. And there aren't very many times in the day that we actually stop and have that play, intentional presence, eye contact, all of those things, and the touch. So we're going to do a lot of different connection builders in this time. So each time we go through one of the responses to grief, I'm going to teach you a different kind of connection that you can do at home with your children. So denial, this isn't happening to me. I'm pretending that everything's okay. Another thing that it can look like is your children don't want to play with their friends or that they don't want to talk. In adults, we just withdraw from social contacts. We don't call them back. We don't want to spend time, or we avoid group meetings. And what they're really saying is, I'm just not ready to deal with it. I'm just not there. So sometimes we go over to our children and we say, how you doing with this? You know, we're trying to be really intentional and have the connection. How you feeling about whatever's going on? How you feeling about the changes happening in our family? And they go, I'm fine. Can you just leave me alone? I'm just fine. They're just saying, I'm just not ready. Is that okay? Yeah, it's okay. It is part of the process, and there will be a day where they'll be ready to look at it a little bit more. So you get to accept, the action step is accept that it's part of the process and address it. So one way to address it is to say, I notice. If they're not playing with their friends, or they don't want to go outside, or they don't want to talk to you, you say, I notice that when Jimmy calls you now, you don't go out and play with him. And you just point out the facts. And what that does is it raises awareness in your child. And the other thing is that there's brain research all about it, but what it teaches you is that children, when they're in grief or when they're in scare or when they're in transition, are often in the parts of their brain where they're not thinking clearly. They're either in a fight or flight mode or they're in a really emotional mode. But we want them to still be able to think and make good decisions. When you bring awareness by saying, I notice, and then pointing out things, it actually helps them to get to the place in their brain where they can be critical thinkers, even in the midst of something that's going on that's difficult. What's the other thing that it does if you notice facts about a situation? It shows you're paying attention. It says, I see you. Oh, look at you. You have mane on your shirt. Can you tell me about that? And I'm just for a moment going to connect with her and say, I notice that you have that. And it's probably going to turn into something else, right? You're probably going to say, oh, well, and follow it by something. The other thing it does is if you notice facts and you try not to get in the judgments, like a judgment would be, oh, you look nice today. Anytime a child's going through transition, there's this push and pull all the time. So anything that can put someone in defensive mode, as we know as adults, anything that puts us in a defensive mode really can break down connection and communication. So I encourage you to think about noticing the facts about a situation as opposed to a judgment. Does that kind of make sense? So if I look at you and I say, you don't ever want to talk to me, is that a fact or a judgment? It's a judgment. If I say, I'm trying to talk to you, and right now it looks like you don't want to talk. Is that a fact or a judgment? It's more of a fact because I'm saying right now you're not talking, and then we can go into it. So it just helps to alleviate some of the defensive nature. The other thing that's really helpful to have in your home is, how many of you have children under the age less than teenager? Okay, this is really helpful less than teenager. And it helps as adults, but teenager, it gets a little fuzzy. There's a place that a lot of homes have or that classrooms have that's called a safe place. And it's designated as a place in the room where your child can get away and feel like they can slow down, they can grieve if they need to, they can cry, they can write, they can pray, they can read their Bible. But that space is for them. And it's for them just to cope and deal with what's going on. And so sometimes there can be a craziness going on in your home, or you can be in a place where you're really emotional. And to teach your child how to use the safe place, you say, there's a spot in this house where you can go. Let's figure out the things that you love and that help you to feel better when you're feeling sad. And so they might say, well, my Bible helps me to feel better. It helps when I read about the truths of who God is. Or they could say, the Play-Doh, sometimes it's for the really little ones, it's just being able to squeeze something to calm themselves down, but very practical tools and things to have in the house. The next one would be maybe a stuffed animal. This actually has a scripture on it. It says, when you're worried, remember that God will always take care of you. And then there's a little squeezy. So things that help them to feel safe or to feel comforted. And when you think about a child, how are they safe? When they're being born or before they're born, what keeps them safe? Where are they? In the womb. And then where do they go? What else keeps them safe? What's the next step after the womb? The arms, right? And then what's the next step? The lap or holding the hand, right? So we keep them safe. And then what's the next step? Yeah, we're all quiet because there's not really a next step. We expect them from there to go and feel safe. Well, when things are all crazy and things are hard in home, sometimes they need to find a place that's external that resembles that safety. Does that make sense? I brought Emma with me. Emma is a volunteer in one of the programs that I oversee, and she used to actually be a participant. 15? Were you 15? When she was 16, her dad died of pancreatic cancer, and she walked through just the grief and the change that she's experienced. Now, Emma, you found that quite a few times there is that feeling of not having safety, right? So what do? Yeah, so finding things that help them to cope. With little kids, you want to teach them tools to help them to do that. So that's the reason for it. Okay, so the routine that we're going to do is just a little one you can do with your kids. Again, most of you had kids that are younger than teenagers. So put your finger out like this, and you say they've been gone, they've been at school, or they've been at the other parents for the day, and you say, you've been gone, you've been missed. Go ahead. And then you look to a person next to you, and you say, where do you want your pointer finger kiss? Where do you want your pointer finger kiss? And so it would look like this. You've been gone, you've been missed. Where would you like your pointer finger kiss? And then you would say, on your finger. And we do that. And then we smile or we laugh or we do something. Is that playfulness? Is that presence? Is it eye contact? Is it touch? Did it take more than 5 seconds? No. But for that moment, there was an opportunity to connect. And we want to find those little moments because as we're dealing with our own stuff, it can be really hard to find that time for connection. So go ahead and pair up with a partner. Go ahead, right there. Can you guys pair up right here and right there? And then you can do your pointer finger. It's not too awkward because it's just a pointer finger. If you don't like touch, you can be like, on your own hand, okay? So go, you've been gone. You've been missed. Where would you like your pointer finger kiss? Okay, so that's just something that you can use, and it also provides a routine and a ritual. What do you think routines and rituals do when kids are going through grief? It develops safety, it develops a calm, and it develops something that's consistent in a world that feels like it's always changing. So it's helpful to do those kinds of routines as much as you possibly can. Another one that is really, really fun, and I teach this to all my parents, is at the end of the night for them to take their child's hand and to tell them what is one thing that they love about their child on each one of their fingers. I love you because you're my daughter. I love you because you are playful and you have such a big, bright smile. I love you because you chose to wear red today. I love you because, and you just go through and you're just pointing out the connection that we have. It's a great way to end the night, and all the parents that I train continuously use that one, and they come back and say, my 17-year-old loves that one. So that's one you can use with all ages. Okay, the next stage would be bargaining. The behaviors would be, I promise that I will be better if you do this for me or if you make this better. And it's the idea that I want to make it better. I have the power to make it better. I hope that I can change the plan of what's going on. Kids may experiment to get what they want. You'll see this in teenage years especially. A bargaining happens when they say, well, I'll do drugs or I'll drink or I'll do something like this if you'll spend time with me or if you'll be my friend. And so there's this bargaining game of I'll compromise this in order to get this. So that's how you see bargaining in an older child situation. Action steps would be accept that this is part of the process and address what you see. With younger kids, probably you experience this plenty. You see the bargaining where you say, I'd like you to go clean your room. And they say, I'll clean my room if you, whatever it might be. Now, maybe some of you don't experience that, but I hear that a lot from parents where they say, we have this interchange of I'm expecting something from you if you give something to me. So you want to be able to point that out and address what you see. And then try to find ways of celebrating that child without judgments. One of the things, again, that's a ritual or routine that you can set up is a celebration board or a praise board. And depending on how creative and how much time you have, this is one that some of the people that I work with use. This is actually a fruit of the spirit tree. And so we pick a fruit, so it might be goodness. Anytime you've experienced goodness throughout the week or throughout the day, you get to put a berry on it just to represent the goodness that you see all around you. Does that make sense? So why does that matter when a child's going through grief? What do you think? Why does it matter? How would this help them? It changes their focus and it helps them to see outside of just their perspective. And that there are constantly things going around them that are not so bad and that are not so hard. And that's really helpful to have a perspective that good still happens, that God is still good, that there's still love in this place. It's a really great thing for kids to be able to see. Yeah, you could establish it any way that you want. So if it was, say it was praises. So there's something that I was thankful for today. I'm thankful for each one of you that came in here today. So I could put up one for each one of you. But you teach your children how to use it by saying, we're going to make this board, and usually make it together because it's a great opportunity to connect. And you say, we want to focus on some of the things or pay attention to some of the things that are good that we're experiencing in our lives or that we enjoy or things that people have done that are nice. But it brings a bigger focus. You teach them how to use it, and then you say, anytime during the day or during the week that you see something like that, put it up there. It might be a chance after dinner or at some point in the evening you said, did you have any time where you saw that? And then people from your family, anybody who's in your family, would go and do that. And it's really neat because it might start out with two, and then by the end of the week, there's 20. And then you can say, oh, God, thank you that we got to see all of those things. And then you get to keep that perspective. Okay. When you're going through grief, as we all know, sometimes we don't always think in a way that's helpful to those that we love or to ourselves. Is that true? Sometimes we respond or react to situations that we go, who are you? I don't even know who I am anymore. But it's true, we do it. And so one of the things that's a tool that you can take home with you is just to star. And it's stop, take a deep breath, and relax and release it to God. Stop, take a deep breath, relax and release it to God. And I know that sounds simple, but we're going to do it together because I cannot tell you the number of parents who have said, this has saved my child's life. The fact that I have remembered to stop and breathe, I was able to think more clearly. I was able to respond out of love instead of out of anger or out of sadness or out of hurt. And that makes all the difference in the world. So we're going to stop. Go ahead and put your hands out like this, or one hand, it doesn't matter. Stop. Go ahead, say it. Stop. Take a deep breath. Relax and release it to God. And what we know is that the exhale is where the release actually happens. So your exhale needs to be longer than your inhale. One more time. Stop. Take a deep breath. Relax and release it to God. That will help your brain have more energy and more oxygen so that you can think more clearly and you can address things in a more loving way. Okay, the next one is anger. Does anyone know what the secondary emotion anger is to? Anger is a secondary emotion to another thing. Do you know what it is? What was that? Hurt. Anger is a secondary emotion to hurt. So when you see your child and they are out of control, it is helpful to remember that it's that they're hurt and they don't know how to express it in a helpful way. And so it's a wonderful opportunity because you guys get to learn how to teach them how to express anger in a different way or express their hurt in a different way. So the way this looks is blaming self or blaming others. I do this one a lot with parents where I will remind them that what anger looks like is aggressive speech. I can't believe you did that. Why are you doing that? What's the key word in there that becomes aggressive? You. I am focused on you, 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 you. I don't even like you anymore. Okay, we sometimes see this happen from our kids, or sometimes, occasionally, it pops out from our own mouths, right? That kind of language. And it helps to remember to stop, take a deep breath, relax and release it to God, and remember that anger is a secondary emotion to hurt, so you can spend some time looking at what the hurt is. So with kids, aggressive behavior, hitting, punching, shoving, yelling, energy producing. When you're angry, your body kind of gets like this, right? Now, sometimes you hear people who say, when you're angry, all you have to do is write it out, or all you have to do is just pray, and you're going to feel so much better. And I don't know about you, but that does not make me feel better. When I am angry, all my body is just pulsating energy, and somehow I need to find a way to let that out in a way that's helpful. Now, if you tell your kids when they're angry and they're like this, and you say, why don't you just sit down and write that out with a pen, what do they usually do? It produces more anger, right? So what are some helpful things that you can do to teach your children when they're angry that is energy producing as well, that will counteract it, but will also be a release from their energy? What? Go for a walk, or go for a run, or jog around the house 70 times, whatever it is that you need to have them do. What's another thing that they can do? Clean the room. Anything that will help them. Yeah, that'll be a great one. Exactly. And if the child doesn't really hate to clean their room, there's that pair for sure. Yeah, drawing, or sometimes oil pastels. We just talked about that. Oil pastels are great to be able to help release some of that energy. Any kind of physical activity, those are great ways to release something like that, or release that energy and turn it into a place where they can be calm and collected and move forward. And you have to release some of that energy before you can ever get to what the hurt is. Okay, so you want to remember that anger is normal, and you want to problem solve with them before they're in the moment of being very angry, how to work through that. Now, we just problem solve some different ways. You can sit down with your children and say, when we get angry, mom gets angry, you get angry, what are some ways that we can release that anger? You know, get that out so we can focus. And they'll love to do that. The other thing that is so important, and this is the biggest thing that I see with families who are going through transition. When a child is hurt, what do you think that we do? We want to make it better. We want to fix it, and we don't want to see them hurt, especially because we know that sometimes that has some tie into what's going on in our personal life. Does that make sense? So oftentimes, I will feel guilty because of what's going on in my personal life, and so when my child is angry or when they're sad, I'll make that sadness about me as opposed to letting them work through that. So the best way to help your child to do that and to help you to keep separate, because that's really, really helpful for you to be separate because then they learn how to manage it, is to use empathy. So if your child, does anybody have an example that they're willing to share about what your child does when they're angry? There's temper tantrums, there's throwing things, yeah. Yes. Okay. Okay, so when he gets frustrated, he jumps up and down and he does this. Sure, because he's throwing a temper tantrum. So, yeah, that's what it could look like. So they do this, and then if they still don't get what they want, they sometimes end up on the floor and they're like, no, I want it. Some of you are like, no, that never happens in my house. But that ends up to escalate. And usually, if we're in that mindset of not want it to be about us, or we're in a public place and we don't want people to point and go, oh, that's the bad parent that doesn't control their child, then sometimes we make it about us, right? If we can keep it separate and say, okay, they're angry right now, they're hurt, then we can address that and help them to move through it. What does that look like? I'm like this, and I say, you're angry. Looks like you're really upset right now. You're not getting that toy, and that feels really frustrating. Am I taking that on by doing that? Am I fixing it? I'm not giving them the toy, right? But what am I doing? I'm just naming it, and I'm saying, okay, you get to work on that. And I'm in there in the moment with you. Now, if any of you are in the position where you're going through the grief and that's how your children are going through it as well, how valuable is it when someone just sits with you and says, it is really hard. That makes sense that you're sad. That makes sense that you're feeling angry right now. What does it do to us when someone does that? What does it do? It's just saying, you notice me, you see me. You're not judging me, you're just with me in the moment. And I think that that is so the heart of God. When you read about how he responds, when you read about how Christ responded in moments, it's not judgment, it's a reflection of, I see this. And he doesn't make it about him, he just points it out there and they go, oh, really? And they've got to deal with it. Does that make sense?
Angry or frustrated.
So you could point out that he's removing himself. Because a lot of times, you notice that as we go through life, a lot of times we're not even aware of what our coping mechanisms are. So for you to say, it looks like you're angry right now and that you don't want to be with us, or it looks like you want to be by yourself right now, that helps him to move to a place where he can think clearly and not just remove himself anymore. But for you to constantly be able to be there and say, it looks like this is what's going on, and then to ask him some of those questions of, is that what you're feeling? Sometimes even the language of, I understand that, or I see that. Sometimes the I statements in that situation, we said the you ones can be really aggressive, but in that situation where you're just trying to find out what the child is feeling, you seem can really help to bring some of that out. If I say, I understand, then who's it about?
Me.
Yeah. So to be able to use the you and point out what they're doing, you seem or it looks like you, and to just keep the eye out of it is really a helpful technique, just in wording. Yeah, yeah, that's really helpful. Yeah. So use empathy, and when they say, why is this happening to me? What's a way you could use empathy there? I don't know why this is happening, but you're sad, it seems. That makes sense. It doesn't make sense right now. It doesn't make sense to me. It doesn't make sense to you. Right? You're just putting it back and saying, it's okay to feel what you're feeling right where you're feeling it. And then we can move through that. Okay, the next thing is depression. The behaviors would be the child seems numb or detached. It's I don't care anymore. It doesn't even matter. You may hear them say, I don't care. Just leave me alone. It doesn't matter. The child's coming to terms that they don't have control. They can't bring back that parent. They can't mend the broken relationship. That they don't have control and they don't know what to do about it. Accept that it's part of the process. And know that they will move through that too, that it's a temporary thing. Again, the big picture, the fruit of the spirit tree, or anything that you can do to help them to get their endorphins pumping again, play some games, go out in the front yard and play some catch. But things that you can do to help continue to create connection and make sure that there's that ebb and flow. Because depression is usually, I didn't release any of that emotion. That's how clinical depression happens, is you don't actually release any of that emotion. And so then all of a sudden it starts to numb out. So you want to give opportunities, like you do, to offer the opportunity for them to share. If they're not willing to do that, just still find ways to play and connect and have fun with them, even when they don't want to go any place when it comes to whatever their loss is. Does that make sense? This is the hardest time to view them as a beautiful person. When they're like, nothing matters, I don't care, doesn't matter anymore. It's really hard to see them for who they're becoming, because in the moment it just looks like disrespect and disregard for any kind of relationship or interaction. Another thing that's helpful, how many of you have, your kids have siblings? Some of you do. If you have two or more children, to be able to say, we're in this together. So Tammy's feeling sad today because of what's going on. And bring that up so that it becomes common to talk about that stuff. Because what often happens is we don't ever give the opportunity as a family to talk through the change that's going on because it's hard and it's emotional and it gets kind of messy. Does that make sense? But if it becomes more common, the language becomes more common, we start to say, he doesn't know what to do today. He's feeling really stressed out. He misses his mom. He doesn't know what to do. And that becomes part of the conversation that really helps that to happen more often and to feel like it's safe to do that. And then there's acceptance. I'm open. These are the behaviors. I'm open. The child's beginning to see outside of the pain and the loss. They're experiencing hope and forward motion. And again, this is for children and adults. Acceptance that this is part of their story, but it doesn't define them. And what's really helpful here is reflection, giving them opportunities to share their stories, to talk it out, to make a memory book. Emma, can you come up here? I asked Emma to share some things with her experience, and she brought her memory book that she made. I think it'd be helpful. But there's so many different things that people can use to, again, celebrate life. Sometimes parents, when parents get a divorce or something of that nature where there's a separation in relationship, sometimes the pictures and anything that has to do with that other person get thrown out, but that child is still attached to that person. And so to be able to accept that those pictures might still be a part of helping that child to heal and to deal with things or to have them be able to talk, those are really helpful things. Or for them to have a book, if they're going through a divorce, if you still have somewhat of a helpful or healthy relationship with your ex, to have a book about their dad at their mom's house or a book about their mom at their dad's house, because there's some comfort in being able to have those crosswires. So Emma made this memory book, and it was for your mom, right? And so, again, her dad passed away, and she decided that for her mom, she wanted to make this book. Did you feel like this was helpful to you to make?
Yeah.
Why so?
Just looking at all the pictures and that.
Now, Emma, whether a child's going through divorce or going through the loss due to death, do you think that often it gets to be where people don't want to talk about it because they're afraid of what the emotional response will be?
Yeah.
Did you find that in your own family?
Sure.
And again, I counsel a lot of families that are going through the divorce issue, and dealing with divorce can be the same situation for children where they get into one parent's house and they want to talk about what's going on. Say they go to their mom's and they want to talk about what's going on with their dad, or that they want to say that they miss their dad, or they want to say that they're angry with their dad, but they know that if they say anything, then it starts to fuel either an emotional response or it'll fuel some kind of verbal response that really isn't helpful for them to be able to have that safety. Does that make sense? That's a hard one to navigate because it's easy to get into that battle, but the most helpful thing for your child is to be able to give them the safe place to express that, and then you find places to go and cry and go let out that emotional stuff that you need to. Probably the most helpful thing, Emma, would you say having a support community has been a great place for that?
Yeah, definitely, because for
youth. And that goes for adults as well as children. One of the best things that we can do for our kids is to get them enrolled in some kind of support community where other kids are going through what they're going through, whether it be the death of a loved one or whether it be a divorce. If you can get them enrolled in some kind of program, there's some great programs out there. I know that here they do run a program. It's called Treasured Promises. I work at Willow Creek, and we run a program called OASIS and then Youth Grief Support. And there's a great one. I think one of you said that you were from Indiana. There's one called DC4K, Divorce Care for Kids. Those are all some support communities. But if you get online, usually you can find stuff. You can always email me, and I can give you some references too. It's amazing how having that safe place for your child can help them to talk, help them to share, and help them to feel safe and cope and learn some skills. The same for adult support communities. As you're carrying all of the balloons of life and you're trying to manage that, You need people. I mean, God made us to live in community and to have people who you can talk to and can hold up a mirror sometimes, and sometimes just put a shoulder out makes all the difference. And that's so scary. It's so scary. But it's going to help you to get the oxygen mask on yourself, so then you can go and do that for your child. Does that make sense? Okay. So some of the tools to use to help a grieving child is welcome the experience with kind of open hands, use pictures, give them opportunities to tell their story, share their experiences, create a safe place, create connections in your day, routines and rituals. Sometimes things as simple as it's time for school, like getting ready for school. Life is crazy, and so to create routines, and depending on the age of your child, anywhere from 10 and under, you can create a book. What do we expect? And then how's it going to go about, how are we going to go about getting that done? And after 21 days of doing it, it becomes habit. So things like that, again, establish some safety in their lives. It gives you some sanity, and it just helps all around. Any questions about anything that we shared? Yeah. It really depends on the situation. A lot of times I'll meet with the parents first. We'll talk through it depending on what's going on. Sometimes it's a change that the parent can do. Sometimes it's that the child needs to be involved in the problem-solving piece of it. And so it just depends on the situation. Anything else? Well, I just want to pray for you, but I just want you to sit for a minute, because so often as life gets busy and life gets hectic and hard, it's hard to find that connection time still with us and God, and really that's where our strength comes from. So I'm just going to invite you to close your eyes and spend a couple minutes in quiet with Him. Father God, thank you for these parents. And thank you for being a loving Father that is with us in all the changes and all the hardships and all the challenges that we face in our lives. Thank you that you call us to come just as we are, and that you embrace us with loving and open arms. And Father, I don't know the situations that are going on in the lives of the people that are in this room, but you do. And we trust that you will give each person wisdom and guidance and the ability to find comfort and share comfort, and the opportunities for them to find the support that they need, the encouragement, the love, and the care. Father, I pray that you divinely intervene in their children's lives and help them to come close to you, even in a change, even in a transition, that those situations will draw them near to you. That in their questions, in their sadness, in their anger, in their denial, that they will want to know more about you. And Father, I pray for a spirit of unity in these families. Thank you for your goodness. Thank you for giving us hope when things are hard, and giving us rest when we're weary. In Jesus' name, amen.